In today's big picture, we're going to do something a little bit different and re-air one of our interviews from earlier this year with Casey Dinges at the American Society of Civil Engineers, where we discussed the topic of infrastructure. We thought this would be a very timely interview to air, given the fact that there was news released earlier this week about a bipartisan bill for $2 trillion to be spent on America's infrastructure. Obviously, this is a topic that we've been discussing quite regularly on Financial Sense NewsHour and something that was a major platform by Trump when he was running. So we're going to discuss with Casey a lot of the issues surrounding infrastructure, including the current D-plus rating, how much Americans are spending in invisible taxes each year due to infrastructure issues, and a lot of other topics in today's interview. So definitely tune in to hear what Casey had to say with this interview that aired on FS Insider in February.
FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense NewsHour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
I know that Congress is eager to pass an infrastructure bill, and I am eager to work with you on legislation to deliver new and important infrastructure investment, including investments in the cutting-edge industries of the future. This is not an option. This is a necessity.
One of the hottest topics in Washington currently is whether or not we're going to see an infrastructure bill passed and spending on this much needed issue. According to a lot of the polling data, Politico actually doing a poll recently asking Americans whether or not they thought it was important to make some progress on America's dilapidated infrastructure and put spending towards it. It was an overwhelming majority, I believe it was over 70% of people saying, yes, we definitely need to do it. But unfortunately, it doesn't appear that we're seeing too much progress. But to give us some clarification on this today is Casey Dinges. He's the Senior Managing Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers to give us an update on America's infrastructure and where things stand currently. Casey, thanks for joining us on the program.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
So, Casey, we spoke with you, I believe it was 2 years ago, during Infrastructure Week in 2017. The American Society of Civil Engineers had just come out with their infrastructure report card. And if any of you were listening to that program back then, the grade was a D-plus across the 16 different categories that you graded. So where do things stand today? Have we seen any progress in this area? Are we still at a D-plus? Give us an update.
I think we still are at a D plus or close. You know, we only do the report card every 4 years, so you know we're close to the midway point between the last report card in 2017 and what will likely be the next one in 2021. So we're still D plus, but you know there are some encouraging signs out there. A number of the states have been very active the last several years on infrastructure. Over half the states in the U.S. have raise their gas tax or similar user fees for transportation infrastructure investment. So that's a very encouraging sign. And then certainly looking ahead to the 116th Congress right now, we have the unique situation of a president of the United States who campaigned on infrastructure and is still talking about infrastructure investment as a priority. President Trump did mention it in his recent State of the Union. And then if you look at the changeover in the House of Representatives, now under Democrat control, there's a very strong interest in infrastructure legislation getting going there. Peter DeFazio, the new chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee from the state of Oregon, has long been a champion for infrastructure. And his Republican counterpart on that committee, the ranking member, Sam Graves of Missouri, also a strong advocate. Now, they may have different approaches on the financing side and funding, but traditionally the Congress and state governments, for that matter, have looked at infrastructure as a bipartisan issue, one that provides benefits to all citizens, allows for increased business development. And if we want to keep sustaining the economy, this would be a good time to have a major infrastructure bill. So to quote former U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood the other day, the stars might be lining up nicely this year in 2019 to see a major move on infrastructure.
Okay. So it sounds like you're a little bit more positive than some of the other reports I've come across. I know that there's been some news headlines talking about lack of a comprehensive bill, lack of clarity on the numbers. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, in the prior State of the Union speeches, President Trump had given specific numbers. He started out with, I believe, was $1 trillion, and then he upped that to $1.5 trillion in his 2017 State of the Union or 2018. But in this most recent one, I don't even think he gave out a number. And it sounded like he did stress the importance of it, but he kind of walked back in terms of, you know, giving a number or even giving some specifics, with a lot of people being disappointed about that.
Right. I wouldn't read too much into that. I think the president, he spoke for, was it 80 minutes? So it was a long presentation. He covered a lot of ground. There are a lot of issues he wanted to get into, but he restated infrastructure as a priority. And in terms of not getting into the details, I think that was a signal from his administration that he's looking to the Congress to really get going on this and to work out the legislative details. That's not unusual for a bill like this, unless he had really strong stance on certain issues that were, you know, make or break for him. I think he's willing to leave the details for Congress, and that actually may work well in this process. We'll see.
Last time we spoke with you, too, we had pointed out that 2/3 or roughly 70% of infrastructure spending actually takes place at the state and local level. So the federal government plays a much smaller role in this than perhaps many people realize. So, you know, where does Congress fit into this in terms of incentivizing infrastructure spending?
Well, there are a lot of ways that this could happen. You know, one possibility that could play out is that, you know, as you say, infrastructure cuts across so many different categories and aspects of life, whether it's, you know, transportation, and, you know, whether that could be aviation or roads or bridges or transit systems or rail systems, all the way to the environment, water, drinking water, structures that hold back water like levees and dams. So infrastructure covers a lot. There are a number of existing programs that, you know, the Congress already has that have been authorized and appropriated, not at adequate amounts over the years, but there's already very much of a structure in place that could get things going if Congress wants to go that way. Congress could use a number of existing programs that are in the Department of Transportation, some are in the Corps of Engineers, some are in EPA, Department or the Federal Aviation Administration, and a few others, and could just move in that direction. And that would be more of an incremental process involving, you know, different pieces of legislation, as opposed to pulling everything together in one large $1 trillion multi-year transportation bill. In terms of priorities, though, for the Congress this year, they're really going to have to get at three things that should lead the way. There's a lot more work that can be done. But the first thing is to fix the Highway Trust Fund, which is fed by the federal gas tax, and that has not been touched since 1993. And as a result, that mere 18 cents that we pay per gallon for the federal gas tax has lost 40% of its purchasing power. So that's hurting us on the investment side. The second issue is the deals with aviation and our airport infrastructure, and there's a passenger facility charge, which we should allow to rise above what it is now, which is $4.50 per airplane ticket. So that would be a second thing. And then the third thing is the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. So this kind of gets into our inland waterway system and the movement of goods on that transportation mode. And there's a trust fund there that has allowed money to just accumulate over the years. So, you know, you kind of, it's kind of puzzling. We use the word trust fund, yet we're piling up money there, not spending it to fix our nation's harbors. So those are three very straightforward and important things that Congress could demonstrate action on this year.
Let's talk about some of the numbers in terms of spending. As we mentioned earlier, you know, Trump saying $1 trillion of spending, then he said $1.5 trillion. What are the numbers that you're looking at in terms of the need to get us from that D plus to something that's, you know, hopefully passing C or better?
Well, you know, we try to get to a letter B, and you know, the economic reports that we developed over the last few years, called the Failure to Act, indicated that over 10 years in the U.S., we're looking at about a $2 trillion investment gap in infrastructure. And we are making $2.5 trillion of infrastructure investment over 10 years, but the gap to close and improve the grades is $2 trillion. So that's, if you annualize that, that's $200 billion a year. So if you think about a U.S. economy of $20 trillion in GDP a year, and trying to devise a way between the three levels of government and the private sector to invest as much as $200 billion a year more in infrastructure. That would get us up into the B grade across the 16 categories. So it is a big challenge, but certainly a doable challenge. And if we consider how important these systems are to the functioning of the economy, to our health and safety as citizens, right now, the underinvestment that we're experiencing is costing each family $9 a day. That's $3,400 a year. That's a lot of money when you add it up. In terms of the overall economy, we're putting at risk nearly $4 trillion in U.S. GDP by the year 2025, and as many as 2.5 million jobs in the U.S. economy, unless we deal with this issue of underinvestment in infrastructure.
Now, Casey, you said that the lack of maintenance, lack of building, rebuilding our infrastructure, it's costing the average family per year $3,400 or $9 a day. What does that entail? Is that like, for example, the cost from having a really bumpy, bad road, you know, the maintenance or the cost that it has on your car? Give us an idea of some of the costs that come from that.
Yes, those can be the direct costs that you're experiencing as a citizen. Although, you know, sometimes we're lucky and, you know, we don't hit the pothole and it's a good year for us, but certainly there's that. But more than that, even it's the overall cost to the economy of the slowdown in the movement of goods. And those costs, slowdown costs, being passed along to consumers. So, you know, being stuck in traffic is also part of it. In major metropolitan areas, citizens lose over, you know, 40 hours a year stuck in traffic. That's like the equivalent of a 1 week vacation, if you think about it. So, all those things, but it's really kind of the drag on the economy.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess a water main breaking, for example. I mean, we saw a lot of that take place just recently with the big polar vortex, right?
Yeah, we're certainly at a time in the seasons where there's going to be a lot of that. And you mentioned water main breaks. There's a water main break 250,000 times a year in the United States. That's about one every 2.5 minutes somewhere in the U.S. During the course of our call, there will be a couple of water main breaks.
Yeah, and that's a problem because, like you say, I mean, that slows down economic activity. I want to quote something here just to kind of put it in perspective. I like the way that this quote puts it. It says, infrastructure is the backbone of the economy and a necessary input to every economic output, so it is critical to our prosperity, public health, and national welfare. That's right off the infrastructure website that the American Society of Civil Engineers produces. So if you want to look at any of the infrastructure spending needs and the report card, you can do so. Again, I want to point out the last one came out in 2017 when we last spoke with you, and the next one is expected in 2021 since you do it every 4 years. So, you know, given what we discussed today, you said there have been some encouraging signs, especially when we look at individual states. Over half of states have raised a gas tax for infrastructure investments. You know, which states are you seeing most of the improvement in? Are there any, you know, notable examples that you could point to?
We're not tracking it quite that, I don't know what the word is, aggressively at this point. We're not really ranking the states. It's a big enough lift for us. You know, we're a volunteer organization of 150,000 civil engineers, mostly in the U.S., but we do have engineers in over 160 countries around the world who are members of ASCE. And what we do is we work with our engineers at the state and local level to develop report cards for those states that they live and work in. So we've noticed in the last several years that has, I think, helped just make an encouraging climate for citizens and legislators to put this issue on the front burner and to develop legislation, including increases in user fees, as I say, going forward. So it's a number of states, but truly over half the states in the last 5 years have taken action to make these investments. And a lot of it does play out at the state and local level. Infrastructure is very much of a local issue. We feel it on an individual basis every day. But there are things the federal government can do to help. And since about a third of the infrastructure investments do come through federal dollars, it's an important funding source going forward. So the feds need to be a reliable partner. The states didn't step up in the last few years in the belief that they could do it without the feds. I think it was an idea of, in trying to encourage the feds, that the states can be solid infrastructure partners. Now the feds need to be solid on their end too.
Yeah, I want to go back to something that was mentioned with the water mains breaking, and you gave the number of just how many are breaking every day. You know, I was recently reading, when it came to the polar vortex, some figures, And someone had pointed out from your organization, actually, that most of the water mains were installed in the early 1900s to the 1950s. And they had a very limited, I mean, the lifespan was 50 years or so in many cases. There was no expectation by many when they were installing a lot of our infrastructure that it would last this long. And it's Greg DiLoretto points out that we're living on borrowed time here.
Well, Greg is one of our past presidents and worked professionally in the drinking water business. So he is certainly an expert on that issue and can speak well to it. That is true. I think that as the current generation of Americans need to look at the situation and realize that we're living off of the investments of previous generations in this country, and what is the legacy we want to leave behind now. Previous generations brought us, the Clean Water Act, cleaning up, rivers and streams in the United States in the beginning in the early 70s, the interstate highway system, which, we started get going in the late 50s, early 60s, in the early parts of the 20th century, the development of dams and, huge, water systems across the United States, Hoover Dam, flood control along the Mississippi River and other things. So previous generations have stepped forward. So we need to ask ourselves, how are we going to step forward? And this is not only for current use, but, for the next 50 to 100 years, we're going to be making an impact. So we do need to think looking forward about issues of resilience and sustainability. We're not going to build infrastructure just the way we have in the past. There's a lot of new technology, new materials, new systems coming into play. So it is an exciting time to consider infrastructure. Just one example of that, the whole issue of connected and autonomous vehicle technology. What kind of infrastructure are we going to need in the transportation space going forward to accommodate that? How much more efficient can we be and safer as a society incorporating these technologies into our infrastructure?
Now, Casey, whenever you mention a new tax or raising taxes, I think, a lot of people get squeamish thinking, I don't want to have to pay more for this. What would you say to that? If people were to look at their taxes going up in order to fund our infrastructure needs?
This is an investment, not a tax. You're already paying $3,400 a year as a family because of the current state of play, the current level of underinvestment in U.S. infrastructure. So you're already paying an invisible tax of $9 a day. And for roughly the cost of a nice cup of coffee for a little over $4 a day, we can eliminate that drag on the economy, put people to work in good paying jobs right now. And as industry and businesses get drawn into the areas that are making these modernization and upgrades to their infrastructure now and going forward, it'll be good in the long run for the U.S. too. When you look at all the economic studies on infrastructure, all the cost-benefit ratios, in general, they come out very strongly for infrastructure. And we also have to think about it as a life safety issue, whether you live near a dam or a levee, whether you're concerned about your drinking water or the treated water you're putting into your waterways. These infrastructure investments are really life safety issues, too.
I think we should point out, too, that the U.S. population is still growing. It may not be growing as fast as it was in the 60s or in the 50s, but it's still growing. So that means, there's going to be more people that are going to be drawing upon our current infrastructure going forward. So that also creates the need for it as well, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's not something that gets a lot of, attention in the headlines, U.S. population growth. But in terms of developed, and mature nations in the world, the U.S. historically grown to close to 1% a year. I think it's a little under that now. Fertility rates have dropped in the U.S., but we still have relatively high immigration into the U.S. legal immigration. It comes out to about 1% a year, which doesn't sound like much, but if you grow something at 1% a year, it actually doubles in size in 70 years. So if you were to sustain 1% growth for 70 years, the U.S. population of roughly 330 million would double.
Yeah, and that's talking about some pretty bad traffic there if we don't do it.
Right. And again, technology may offer, some solutions. But again, think about traffic. It's an infrastructure issue. There's, policy issues. Certain parts of the country, you see more technology now allows people to work from home and, places remotely from the office. So some of the, transportation patterns have changed a bit. And again, thinking about connected and autonomous vehicles, you know, we can perhaps in the future drive more safely and more efficiently. So there are some kind of exciting and interesting prospects going forward. And oftentimes when you say infrastructure, transportation is the first thing that comes to people's minds, because I think so many people in this country struggle with it, whether it's on in the transit space where the lowest, you know, grade in our report card is shown at a D minus, or in the road space where people experience frustration almost every day in metropolitan areas.
Well, and, you know, transportation is a big one, but another one that's probably taken for granted in just terms of how important it is the electrical grid, right? I mean, if the electric grid were to fail, that would be pretty devastating, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, think about it. Anytime any one of us have experienced, you know, one of the, you know, power failures, whether it's just a isolated one because of a storm, or, you know, one of those more unusual but large, you know, regional or semi-national blackouts that have occurred over the years, huge impact on business, certainly individual families, you know, just having to empty out a freezer and replace $300 worth of food that you might have had in there would be a direct impact on an individual citizen, not to mention the impact on businesses when something like that happens. Hugely disruptive.
You know, and I want to mention too, long-term competitiveness. When we think about U.S. versus the currently the second world's largest economy, China, and other countries, I mean, here you have China investing massive amounts of money towards their infrastructure. Of course, that this has been one way that they've kept their economy growing. But on the other hand, I mean, these are projects that are going to maintain their population growth for years and years to come. And yet, on the other hand, we can't seem to move the needle too much at the federal level, at least. So, you know, how does this impact our competitiveness for the long term?
It is certainly, you talk to businesses, certainly major businesses with international profiles in this country, they're big supporters of infrastructure investment. And you see that through groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, and others. It should be a wake-up call, the levels of investment we're seeing in some of the Asian countries you identified, China. Western Europe, I think, for a number of years was, you know, ahead of us, too. So, you know, that should be an alert for us. And, you know, recently I saw a report from the World Economic Forum. It ranks different countries in terms of a number of economic issues. And in the case of infrastructure, the U.S. is ranked 9th overall in the world in infrastructure and 11th in transportation infrastructure. So that should be cause for concern for all of us.
Well, Casey, I want to thank you for coming on to our show today. Once again, I want to note the next report card is going to be coming out in 2021. So hopefully we'll see some progress there. As you said, the stars appear to be aligned for 2019. So I guess that is something to look forward to. We'll have to track that going forward. And with that said, would you mind telling our audience a little bit more about the American Society of Civil Engineers and the best place to follow your work when it is related to the infrastructure in particular?
Thanks for asking that. ASCE, the American Society of Civil Engineers, is a nonprofit professional organization of civil engineers from around the U.S. and around the world. We've been in existence since 1852. We're headquartered in Reston, Virginia, and you can find out information at www.asce.org/report card. And I encourage people to stay engaged on this issue. It's 2019 is going to be a big year for infrastructure, and individual citizens, I think, can have a profound impact on moving this issue forward.
Well, Casey, that sounds like a ray of hope. And I, as we discussed today, I mean, it's all costing us thousands of dollars each year, $9 a day, if we don't make these necessary improvements. So thank you for coming on and giving us an update. We look forward to speaking with you in the future.
I appreciate it. Good to be with you.
So once again, that was Casey Dinges. He's the Senior Managing Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers. If you want to follow more of their work, you can do so at infrastructurereportcard.org, where they talk about the 16 different categories that they grade, the individual grades that they receive, even some of the progress that's being made at the state and local level. As he said, there has been a number of encouraging signs, with over half of the states raising a gas tax. And before you think, hey, tax is going up, remember what he said. You know, we are all paying some type of tax. Now, we're currently paying, according to their estimates, $3,400 per year or $9 a day because of our aging infrastructure due to water mains breaking, people having to come in and fix them, business activity being slowed, you not being able to get to work on time because of potholes or just the general drag on economic activity. So all of that comes together in this. And one thing that we didn't point out as well is that, you know, if one part of the infrastructure fails or if it's really not meeting the needs of society, I mean, there is a cascading effect that can a lot of times take place as well. You think about the electric grid failing and seeing a blackout. I mean, that just shuts down a whole city in many cases. So that's a massive effect. So the impacts are pretty large here when we think about how these can affect you and me and US as a whole. And I think we do need to point out again, you know, long-term competitiveness is also an issue here. When you have places like China and other countries investing into their infrastructure for the long term, these investments that are going to last them, you know, 50, maybe even 100 years, as we have been living off of investments that were made 100 years ago in our case, they're making those currently. And so we also need to be investing for the future. Hopefully, as Casey says, 2019 will be the year that we see a comprehensive bill passed by Congress, something that Trump can sign. So Casey is hopeful, and I guess we'll just have to see. If you have any questions on what we discussed today, please feel free to email me at cris@financialsense.com. I'm Chris Sheridan. You're listening to FS Insider.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.